You don't need to be ripped. You just need the right shirt. Epic Fits gives you a clean, confident silhouette. Snug on the arms, soft on the skin, generous where it counts. And with deals like $15 per tee, they won't break the bank. Visit epicfits.com today. Epic Fits. T-shirts that get it.
Hello, it's the Let's Get Running podcast. Thanks for downloading or listening or whatever it is you are doing right about now. Thanks for tuning in, essentially. It's good to have you along. If you're enjoying the podcast, which I hope you are, and you've listened to a few of the back episodes, we really need reviews. We need people to spread the word about the show. So any help you can give me on that front is much appreciated. This week's show is going to be a corker. We've got two interviews on this week's show. As it's going to be a special episode, which is showcasing or previewing the Night of the 10,000 Meter PBs, which takes place on the 20th of May, which is this Saturday, at Parliament Athletics Track in Highgate. Now, if you haven't heard about this race or this event, it's fantastic. It's a festival of endurance running. It's a series of amazing 10,000 meter races on the track, which culminates in the men's and women's British Athletics Championships and trial for the World Championships, which takes place in London this year. So you're going to get the best of Britain battling out to see who's going to represent Great Britain in the World Championships this year. On top of that, there's a bit of everything for everybody. There's music, there's food, there's DJs. That's music really, isn't it? But there's a great atmosphere. You can actually stand and watch the action in lane three, so you're right up close to these incredible international athletes, and you can almost touch them. Don't actually touch them, that would be bad for the races and might get you arrested, but other than that, you're almost there. It's a fantastic experience, and I think if you're not busy on Saturday, or even if you're busy with something a bit inane, get down to London. Get down to Parliament Hill Athletics Track and enjoy the action. Most importantly, it's absolutely free, so you don't have to spend a penny in watching this racing. Last year, I mean, we speak to the winner that of last year's women's race, Jess Andrews, in this week's podcast. Last year's women's race was one of the best moments of sport in the whole of the year last year. So if you want to be part of that, you want to see it live, you've got to get down there and join in. Now, I can't be there, unfortunately, but I'm going to be watching on Vinco Sports. I think it's www.runjumpthrow.com. I think you can watch all the action live. So if you're not in London, tune in and watch it there. And it will be a really fantastic spectacle. Now, the show, our first interview is with Rob Wilson. Now, Rob is a Highgate stalwart. He is a distance runner. He's also a volunteer, or the volunteer team manager, this Saturday, so he's going to talk about his job, his role, and a bit of background about the event if you haven't heard about it before. We're also then going to be talking to Jess Andrews. So Jess won, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, she won the women's race last year, beating Lenette Masai, who was a former world champion and an incredible athlete from Kenya. Great piece of running from Jess last year. She talks about her preparation for this year and how she feels her training's gone. Talk a bit about the Olympics too. Very interesting. And that's it. I can only urge you to get down there on Saturday. It's going to be great. Again, if you can, give us a review. That's perfect. And hope you enjoy the show. Here we go. So, Rob, Night of the 10,000 Meter PBs is next week, May the 20th, on Saturday. Can you just give somebody who's never heard about the event a little bit of background about what it's going to entail on Saturday?
Yeah, I suppose if you think about a traditional athletics meeting might be, completely turn that on its head and open up your imagination well beyond that. So it's an afternoon and evening of seven 10,000 meter races, so seven lots of 25 laps of the track. It's basically become a carnival of distance running and a whole party atmosphere at which the races themselves are the centerpiece. So we have the races themselves going on, but whilst they're going on, we have live music, we've got DJs, we have a seminar going on, we've got food, we've got booze. And I think importantly, spectators are encouraged down into lane three of the track. So they're right close up to the athletes, a bit like when you see cyclists in the alpine climbs. They're right in the athlete's face, really cheering them on. And what's more, the athletes even run through, you know, a beer tent where there's a DJ on the decks and there's a bar. So, you know, it's just a complete absolute buzz and hive of athletics.
Cool. And how long has it been going now?
Yeah, so it first started in 2013, so we're now into the fifth year. And basically, it's grown year on year since then. I think back then it was a Thursday night, and there were just three races. And even then, there was a crowd on the home straight. There were people down there having a few beers and cheering on their friends and family, which, you know, now might seem, you know, pretty basic. But then I think was pretty revolutionary in terms of athletics meetings, where you pretty much have one man and the dog. And that first year, the A race was won by a chap called Ed McGinley. And I think he went sub 30. He was over from Northern Ireland. I think that really helped boost it on and prove that you can get, you know, good quality 10,000 meter racing that wasn't necessarily a championship race. And it's, as I say, it's just grown year on year from then. And we've seen more and more athletes racing, more and more PBs set, higher quality and higher caliber athletes, and more importantly, just more awareness amongst the local running community, the national running community, and even the global running community, which has just culminated in the crowd swelling and swelling. So I think last year we had north of 3,000 people trackside by the time we had those men's and women's A races. This year we're probably looking to be up to even maybe 5,000 if the weather stays on side. And, you know, things like the coverage that we're now getting in The Guardian, Athletics Press. And as I say, it's not just in the UK, but, you know, people in Europe and America are starting to look up and take notice and see that, you know, an event like this can grow and can do things differently and rip up the rule book, I guess.
Yeah. And it's now a British athletics trial, isn't it? Is that right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So there's actually a few subplots. This year it's the IAAF World Champs qualifying race for both men and women, which I think is a really nice story and follows on from last year, where the races were the Rio trial. To have the trial for the World Champs in London, you know, just a few miles down the road is really quite emblematic for the event. There's also the trials for the European Under 23 Championship this summer. And we've also got the Bucks of the British Universities championship all wrapped into the evening. So there's lots and lots at stake. There's lots of value. And then also you've got athletes in the races going for various Commonwealth times. And then also I think we've actually reached a stage where just winning the night of the 10Ks or winning the Highgate 10K or competing in it has prestige in itself. It's become a bit of a classic, emblematic event. And I think, you know, for top runners and for top British runners, it's something they really, really want to be a part of and to win.
Yeah. And how many races did you say we've got this Saturday?
Yeah, so we're going up again. We've got seven, so it's a hell of a lot of races, a lot to get through. And I think what's really notable this year is just how strong the standard is across those seven races. So I think there's two women only races this year. So there's the ladies' development race, which is just to give that sub elite, those good club women, the opportunity to race 25 laps, and then the elite women's race, which is again the showcase event.
Ah, so it's coming on last again, the women's race.
Absolutely, and I think that just because there's just so much going on, it's such a fierce battle in that ladies' race. Again, that's kind of emblematic of the whole event and how it's happy to do things differently and to just think differently. And then there are five other men's races across nine. I think I looked at the start list. It's something like 150 men and 70 women down start. So, you know, over 200 athletes across the night. So I think, you know, if you think a few years ago, you'd barely have 200 athletes running a 10,000 metre on the track in a year in the UK. And we've got it all happening one afternoon, one evening.
Probably go on to this a bit later. But Ben Poacher, whose brainchild the event was, he set it up I can't remember what year it was. There was a women's race at the British trial where only one female runner turned up and ran on her own, Ali Dixon. And to now see that number of women doing it is amazing.
Yeah, I think that was part of it. And I think a lot of athletes and especially some of those top guys can really identify with the thinking behind it, which is that, you know, it really went out of fashion, didn't it, 10,000 metre running. The opportunities were few and far between. It was generally either very, 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 very top elite guys would get an opportunity, or there would be the odd 10,000 metre race that, because it wasn't really pushed, wasn't really publicised, you'd get, you know, quite a range of abilities in it, which doesn't really lend itself to good racing and doesn't lend itself to fast times. I think sort of that culminated, of course, with, Ali Dixon having to run on her own. I think she ask to run with the men, make she could even get a run out. And again, that was probably, those races were probably run in front of, a pretty, sparsely populated stadium. And I think it didn't have to be like that. And that was kind of Ben's vision, that there was another way, and you can actually make it a lot more exciting, incentivize people to participate. And there was always demand, I think, from athletes. There was latent demand sitting there to get out and to race 25 laps. And, if you bring more to the party, so to speak, and make it a party, then there's a lot more value for spectators and people to come down and to really enjoy and make 25 laps cool again, I guess.
Yeah, and obviously Paula, Seb and Ronnie O'Sullivan, is it? Are they there down this year? What's that? What's going on there? What are they doing?
Yeah, I think it's another string to the events bow of kind of the magical and the eclectic. So last year was the Legend Seminar, where we had some great British marathon runners of the past. We had Eamon Martin, we had Nick Rose, Paul Evans and Charlie Spedding. So they were down, I think it's about an hour or so long. And that was a panel, a Q&A panel, really delving into sort of the training habits, the methodology, and their thinking behind running good marathons and how that links back to 10,000 meter running, the club scene, training, and the wider approach. And this year we go, one step further left field, I guess, with, Paula Radcliffe, obviously, world record holder, Seb Coe, and, probably the most famous running snooker player there is, Sullivan.
The trouble with that, though, is you set the bar, it can't go any higher. Like, because Paula's like the greatest runner, or the greatest endurance runner of potentially all time, regardless of sex or nationality, really, after her 2:15 marathon. So there's nowhere else to go.
Arguably got, I suppose, you could say you've got in many ways, the greatest middle distance runner that's ever lived, maybe. You've got the greatest marathoner that's maybe ever lived, and you've maybe got the greatest ever snooker player. They're all going to be on stage at once, and I think the plan is for Ronnie to do some of the comparing. And, I think anyone that watches snooker or sees Ronnie being interviewed, can be quite unique in the way he approaches things and discusses. But it's, I think, the event and the whole kind of weird and wonderful nature of the event really, really sits well with Ronnie. He's been quite widely documented as loving running, and he runs in things like the Met League for Green, and he's always supported the event. It's, I think, what's really nice about this is Ronnie's obviously a celebrity in his own right, but when he comes to Night of 10Ks, I think he comes as a fan and comes as part of the athletics community, which is really what it's all about. And it's just about, standing shoulder to shoulder with fellow runners or fellow people who are involved in the sport, and celebrating what's good about it. And I think the Ronnie, Paula, Seb tie-in, perhaps, is as weird and wonderful as we've gone yet. But, who knows, 2018, I'm sure Ben's got something up his sleeve. It'll take it further, you know what Ben's like.
Yeah, it's a massive draw. I mean, if you're free on a Saturday in London, and you've got to get up there, really, just to see those guys speaking. And what time is that? What time is the seminar, by the way?
Yeah, it's just slightly different this year. So we've got the first race is at 3:15, and then we have the first four races running back to back. Then we have a break for the seminar, which is going to be screened on the big screen as well. So you can still be there having your beer, going to the bar, hanging out with your mates, with your food, watching the seminar. And then that, once the seminar ends, then we roll into the final three races, which will be the three fastest races, or the fastest women's race, fastest men's race, and the second fastest men's race. So really, it was the seminar, I guess, and kicks off the real crescendo into the fast racing. And just breaks things up, because that is a lot of racing back to back, but it just gives a bit of a breather.
Yeah, and your role is, you're head of volunteers on the night. How many of your volunteers will you have there, do you think?
I think that's a key part of the night and the event, and something that we should really celebrate and not forget, is just that it is entirely volunteer built, volunteer created, volunteer staff. There's obviously Ben Poche is the brains behind it, and I think it's fair to say that it simply just would never have happened without him, and the work he's done there is magnificent. I think the whole British athletics community are just absolutely inspired by what he's done, but you know, right the way through to parents at the club, to the club helpers, to people like Graham Norris at Highgate Harriers, who give selflessly give all their own time to making sure that logistically everything's in place for the night is really key. And I think all in all, you're probably looking at upwards of 200 volunteers, or in, you know, in one way, shape or another.
Wow.
The bars are all staffed by volunteers. The trackside marshals, which plays such a key part in it, and is really my area, where it's about recruiting, you know, close to 150 guys and girls to stand around the track and hold a portable barrier to stop the crowds affecting the racing or interfering with the racing, but at the same time allow us to keep having athletes in lane three. If you think that's almost a human shield right the way around an athletic track, and to be stood up for you know, a whole afternoon for best part of 6 hours is some ask. So in terms of the volunteering, it is, you know, it's mesmerizing. It never fails to, I guess, to amaze and impress year in, year out. People keep coming back, and it's so much of it is club members. I think there's hardly anyone at Highgate Harriers who's not involved in the night one way or another, be it either running the race to, you know, Chris Rainsford, sorry, and Hannah Viner, who have left Spike, who are putting together the event programme, as I say, right the way through to people doing the entries, commentaries, the electrics, the big screen, the trackside volunteers, the entries on the day, timekeeping. It's completely, you know, non-commercial and non-corporate in that sense. And I think that's what in many ways makes it so special, and gives other clubs and other people the kind of belief, you know, that they can do so too. And I think that's always been part of the mission, to, you know, almost just keep spreading the word and keep letting that wider athletics community know that, you know, you can make things happen. You can, if you build it, they'll come.
Yeah. And then in terms of entries now, there's no one else can enter the races now, that it's all closed, right?
Yeah, all the entries are entry closed. And I think this year it's the same as happened every year. The standard's got higher and higher, and it's become a more and more prestigious race for people to race. So the entries, you know, fill up super quickly. And, you know, looking at the men's field, there's hardly anyone, I think, that's going to be running outside, or at least anyone targeting much outside 32 minutes. And, you know, when you think there's 150 men entered, that's some field. But there's still loads of ways you can be involved in the race or in the evening. Just get down there, turn up. It's completely free to attend. So, you know, if you're in London or if you're not in London, come down. Transport links are good. Come be part of it. I think the beauty of the night is it's actually more than the sum of its parts. It's more than just the volunteers. It's more than the athletes. It's more than the spectators. It's that coming together of a whole community that just wants to celebrate athletics, celebrate distance running, and have a hell of a lot of fun doing so. So come down, beer tents, home straight, back straight, athletes are running through them. Obviously the seminar, there's food, bring your friends, bring your family, and get involved, be part of it.
Yeah, and it's part of quite a big resurgence in 10,000 metre run. We talked about Ali Dixon and her solo run for the British Championships, but a lot of this guys in the 70s and 80s who are running great marathon times have talked about having experience of running on the track, and I've run 10,000 metres myself on the track. It's really different to running a 10k on the road, because it requires incredible concentration for 25 laps. It's a boring to go round and round and round. At least in a 10k on a road, you've got corners, you've got this and you've got that. It's really hard to concentrate, which I think you need that concentration to survive in a marathon. And I think there's something happening with Strava, isn't there? People can actually go and give it a go and experience what that's like. Obviously not the atmosphere you're going to get at Highgate next week, but you can experience the challenge of running 10k. What's that Strava challenge?
Yes. So the guys from Strava are sponsoring the event this year. One of the event sponsors that helped make it happen. And part of it is, I don't know if everybody's familiar with Strava and how it works, there's a challenge where you can go down to Parliament Hill track. You'd have to, I think it's a couple of quid to use the track. If it's manned, but sometimes it's closed, and you can hop over the fence. I'm not sure City of London appreciate me saying that, but there is ways to do it. Get on the track and run your own 25 laps. You can run at any pace you want. You can tempo it. Maybe do it as, you know, part of a wider session if you were doing 200 fast, 200 easy. But if you get down there and do 25 laps on your Strava and upload that, that will get registered that you've been part of the Night of the 10K challenge. Go on Strava, find the Night of the 10K group. There's more details of it there. And I think Strava have got a few giveaways and promotions for people that do complete the challenge. Maybe get your mates together. As you say, it can be a little bit lonely doing 25 laps of the track. But I think there's a few of us next week who are going to pop down and maybe do a tempo or a steady run around it on the Friday night just to kind of break it in and kind of celebrate the weird and wonderful nature of 25 laps on a hillside overlooking London.
And in terms of the racing on the night, what are you most looking forward to in terms of those top races?
Yeah, I think in terms of, in pure racing terms, the women's race really excites me. I mean, last year it really stole the show, I think. Obviously, Jess Andrews. Yeah. Can't really say it's a breakthrough. She obviously had a bit of pedigree, but I think very few people backed her to go away and win the race and do it in such style and qualify for Rio. And yeah. I think when you look this year at the women's race, and it's super exciting. You've got five women already have got the qualifying time. I think when you look through the start list, there's probably another three or four who don't have it, who could get it. I think it's 32:15 the qualifying time. So and maybe just a little bit more in reach of more women than the men's time is for the men. So it makes it, some interesting subplots could happen there, because the ladies that have got the qualifying time, so they just want a tactical race and to get one of the first two slots. But then, if some of those without the qualifying time really want to push on and try and get the qualifying time, their hand's going to be forced a little bit. They'll have to go with it. So you've got a lot of interest there. Augusto from Portugal is coming over and racing. It's quite a big name as well, which I think is, the women's race has historically done quite well at, getting over, some star names. I think we've had Sophie Duarte, Lynette Masai last year. So Augusto adds to that. But the British girls, there's so many of them, I think, that could be in that mix. Joe Pavey back after a DNF at London. She performs well on the big occasion. She's accustomed to it. She must think she's got a chance, or she wouldn't be coming across. Christ knows how many world championships or championships she's now qualified for, but has she got another chance? V40, Mother, I think that would be a great story. Obviously Kate Avery as well. I just think there's so much could happen in that women's race, and I think it could just come down to a really real shootout, with the strongest two women standing to take the places.
If you're a bookie, who would you say is on the shortest side? Who is the favourite out of the lot, do you think? Well, apart from Augusto, probably is the...
Well, you'd have said the same thing about
Lynette Masai.
And Jess Andrews pushed past her. I've just got a funny feeling that Jess Andrews could do it again. She ran well on the road, I think, last week, was it? Over in Spain. She's got the time. She's going to have a lot of confidence. She's run well on the track before, and I think... You know the track, I know the track. It's not, I guess it's not what you would class as a fast track. It's quite a hard track, but the atmosphere gives it an added dimension. I'm going to say Jess Andrews for the win again.
Okay, perfect. And the men's race, similar field to last year, really, I suppose.
I think the men's race is really interesting. I mean, there's a few more dynamics, I think. You'd have to say the 27:45 standard would be pretty hard to hit on the night.
That is ridiculous. That is one point I forgot to think about. But it's faster for the world champion from a home world championships in London. She haven't got to pay for any travel. It's harder to get a qualifying time this year than it was to go to the Olympics. That's absolutely obscene. It's such a crazy decision.
I can't understand it. You need to incentivize people and make it realistic. So I don't think, for example, Vernon's not got it, Millington's not got it. These are top runners. I mean, Vernon just ran under 28 a few weeks back now in California, but just going under 28 and then going under 27:45 is another big ask again. Absolutely would love to see him do it at Highgate, and I think he's really one of the people's champs, Vernon. He's well liked by the athletics community. He's always, he puts out there, he's a brave runner, he's an honest runner, he's loyal to the club scene. And I'd love to see Vernon put down another big performance like he did a few years back and just smash the field to bits. Millington, he DNF'd, I think, over in California a few weeks back. That was over 5K. Not entirely sure the story there. Dowie Griffiths, Paul Pollock, Ben Connor. So there are a few good guys there, but I think what maybe makes that the men's race really interesting is when you start looking at things like the European under-23s, which I think is 29:25. So not just in the A race, but even in the B race, there are going to be lads out there that are maybe 30-minute runners who think, well, you know what, if the stars align and I have a really, really good day, maybe I can run 29:24, and why not go for it? So I think you're going to have a lot of a lot of optimistic lads out there really, you know, putting it on the line early. And it'd be interesting to see what happens. And you've got things like the Commonwealth qualifying as well for Wales and Scotland. I know Luke Caldwell's running, Dowie Griffiths, of course, who ran low 28. You know, perhaps Commonwealth Games qualifying is going to be a little bit more realistic for those guys than the world champs. But, you know, I'd absolutely love to see Vernon get close to that 27:45. But I wouldn't be surprised if Vernon and Millington sort of approach it a little bit like Millington did last year, which is, you know, win the trial and then go to Holland and find the really, really fast 10K and bank behind time there. We could perhaps see something like that again.
Yeah, it's interesting actually, because I've seen quite a few Dutch guys in this race, which is strange. So Bart Noonan, who's pretty good on the scene over here, fairly young, and I think it's another guy, Gert Jorisma. My pronunciation, even after living in Holland for 6 months, is pretty bad. But it's interesting to see lots of foreign athletes coming over and using this race as a good opportunity to try and set an early season time too.
Yeah, I think that just really goes to show the pedigree of the race and really where it's come from. When you think about that first year, Ed McGinney winning it just inside 30 minutes, you know, that wouldn't get him in the A race now. And that's just how that's really turned around. And you look down that men's start list and the sheer volume of guys that arrive at very, very low 29s or 28s as target time is really, really impressive. So there's a lot of guys that are going to go out hard, going to put it out there and say a chasing fast times, which was what the event was about in the first place. I think Ben said in recent weeks and over the years, people talk about fast races and finding, you know, is that a fast course or how do I get in a fast race? Well, the easiest way to get a fast race is just to find a track, which, you know, is 10,000 metres and get a good field together, get a good outfit. And, you know, if you work together and if the conditions are right, there's no reason people can't run some really, really quick times.
And it's just for athletics fans. It's just such a good spectacle to think, like, you hear these times, 28 minutes, 27 minutes, to actually see them running these times, so up close, and to experience the atmosphere is incredible. Like, and it's free. You pay for the, you know, 60, 70 quid to go to the Olympic Stadium, and you're miles away from these athletes running similar times.
You can see the beads of sweat on the athletes. You're that. You can smell the perspiration. It's like something that I don't think really exists in athletics. Well, there are some
or any sport really. I don't know. Well,
it's so close. How can you're within touching distance of these people. You see them 25 times. You know, that's as well one of the beauties of the 10K is that, oh, it's 25 laps. That's boring. But turn that on its head. You get to see the athletes come by 25 times. Those 25 laps can play out like a novel, you know. It can ebb and flow. The racing can really, really chop and change. And, you know, beer in hand, you've got live music, running through the back straight tent, where Saw, who a company I work for, we're big sponsors of the event and have been for the last 2 years now. We've got that back straight sponsored, and we're going to have our DJs there on the decks. There's going to be a bar. And it's athletes are going through a whole cacophony of noise, a party, a carnival. It's just it's completely unique. And yeah, long may that continue.
And speaking of Saw, you guys are obviously sponsoring the back straight, but also there might be a chance to get some your hands on some apparel or some kind of deals out there.
Yes, we've got a lot of things going on around the night to really support it and celebrate it and do our bit. We're going to have some interesting deals coming to keep your eyes peeled. We're going to be on site, as say. We've got that Backstreet Bar is going to be a hub of activity. We're going to have some beers to give away, so come down. If you get there early enough, first round's on us, come and join us for a beer. And we're going to have some other promotions and activities which will be released later in the week. Some interesting offers which I think everybody will love. Come down, check out our kit, and mostly just be part of the party. I think, you know, that's what we're all about. That's what the event's all about, just celebrating running, celebrating what it is and celebrating the community.
Excellent. So, I mean, I don't think we just sell the night any further. Like, it's a no-brainer, really. If you want to have a good Saturday, get on down to Parliament Hill in North London, basically.
Absolutely, absolutely. You see nothing like it anywhere else. You're going to see top-quality athletics. It's all volunteer, all volunteer-backed, and it's completely, completely free. Come down, have a beer, support the athletes, and just, be part of the party.
Excellent. Nice one, Rob. Thanks a lot for that.
All right. Cheers, mate.
Hey, how you doing?
Hi, I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Good.
Whereabouts are you now?
I've just come down to Girona. So I was up at my house in Andorra, but I've come down here. My coach is down here. So, yeah, I usually come down here a few days before the races.
In Andorra, do you say?
Yeah, so I live in Andorra.
Wow.
But also we have a base in Girona in Spain, just by Barcelona.
Okay.
So my husband's a professional cyclist, so it's kind of, that's why we live abroad. And, yeah, so we have a base in Girona, which is close to my coach. So yeah, it's always nice to sharpen up down here a bit before I head away.
Is it a Spanish guy, the coach?
Yes, it is. Yeah. Yeah, he is. Yeah.
Yeah. How did you get started with him?
So when I moved out here a few years ago, I was doing just literally a few local races. They love a good fun run here. And, he kind of obviously saw me running and I was winning a few of the races, and he just said, oh, if you want to join a group, then come on down and join us. And, it was probably about a year until I actually decided to go down and join them. And then I think that was in the May or June, and I tore my hamstrings. It was another 3 months before I really started to train with him, and then since then I've been with him ever since. So,
wow.
Yeah, he's a fantastic coach.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah, yeah, it's really, really good fun. So he even learned English for me.
Really?
Before he spoke no English, and then now he goes to English lessons every week, and he's pretty much perfect English now. So.
Wow. And how's your Spanish?
It's coming there. They actually speak Catalan here.
Okay.
And so it's really difficult because it's trying to understand, because if they see you're foreign, they will speak Spanish to you. Whereas my coach and everyone will try and speak Catalan. So I get so confused with which one are they speaking. But my husband speaks like every language. So
yeah.
It makes me look a little bit lazy with actually trying to learn it, you know. But I'm starting proper lessons next Monday. So I'm looking forward to that, yeah.
It's funny because you think of Andorra as quite a... you don't think of it as being a very nice, particularly like an appealing country to go and live in, but I guess the weather's fantastic and stuff, isn't it? And it's just
it's beautiful, yeah. It's up in like it's just absolutely stunning up there. We're in the mountains, so we do get cold winters, but then we get the really beautiful hot summers. But it's not humid; it's really fresh.
Yeah.
And it's just it's living in the mountains, you know. And it's got nice restaurants. The food's amazing. The people are nice, you know. And there's a lot of cyclists living up there now because it's such a good place, especially for Dan. My husband's a climber,
yeah.
So it's perfect for his training, and it's hard for my training, but it helps a lot. So,
are you at altitude?
Yeah, we are. Our house is 1400, but it goes way higher than that. But yeah, the house is at 14, so it's perfect. You know, it means that it's not too high, so
yeah.
we don't even feel the altitude now when we go up there, which is nice.
Yeah, and you say it's not too good for your training. Is it just mostly on road and stuff?
I personally love it, but I think if anyone came out, they'd be like, wow, because it's just up and down. There's no flat running. I know one trail of about 4.5K, which is flat, and everything else is just up and down mountains. But for me, I love just going out and running and exploring. So, so I really enjoy it.
So the marathon training might have to wait.
Maybe a little while. Yeah, maybe.
So it was a great year last year, 2016, and like, it all kicked off this time last year at the Highgate race. Do you remember anything about that race now, looking back?
I do actually. It's actually really weird. I can't believe it's a year ago already. That's just crazy. But I have a few moments in the race and after the race that have stuck in my head, but it does feel like a bit of a blur because I think most people would say it was almost a perfect dream night for me, and it really was. Everything went perfectly.
Yeah.
And I couldn't have asked for any more. So, yeah, it was one of those amazing moments. And I had my twin there, my mum was there. The crowds are just incredible. Like, you can't explain the feeling of sensation when you're running, how incredible. You have these people just scream at you, drinking beer, and then you have the dancers and just music and everything. It's just so surreal, but so much fun.
Yeah, and because you even beat Lynette Massai, like, world champion and stuff, didn't you? Which is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was literally, before the race, me and my coach knew that I was in really good shape, but it was only my second ever track race over 10K.
Mm.
So the first race I did was a few weeks before the Highgate, and we didn't want to set off too fast, too hard in the race. It was at the Spanish Championships, actually, and we didn't want to set off too hard or too fast. I wanted to get a feeling, see how I feel, and I actually really, really enjoyed it. And then coming up to Highgate, I knew that I was feeling good and I was feeling strong, and I have a lot of faith in my coach, and he kind of said, you can do it. You can like stick with the front girl, see how you feel. If you feel good near the end, push on. And that's kind of what I did. And I didn't really think too much in the race. So I didn't look at the lap times. I didn't worry about who was around me. I just went off feeling, and I wasn't even looking at the times. I couldn't tell you what my lap times were. Although my twin was trying to shout the lap times as I was going around. But then other than that, I had really, really good feelings and good sensations. So I just went for it. And yeah, obviously it paid off.
And did you, before the race, no one really put you down as a contender. Were you thinking, leading up to it, were you thinking it was possible for you to make the Olympic team? Or were you just looking to go and race as well as you could?
It was one of those things that had the weirdest thing happen to me. I think it was like 2 weeks before the race. I was just doing an easy jog. And I came back and I said to Dan, my partner, I was like, I just felt like I'm going to win the trials and go into the Olympics. And it was just the weirdest sensation. I was just running. And you know, you just think of something and then you kind of like, you brush it off thinking, oh, that's just ridiculous. But my coach said to me from the first time he met me, he was like, you can make Rio next year. And it was one of those, again, I would just brush it off like, yeah, whatever. I just want to get back, enjoy my running and do as best I can. And then he was kind of saying the times that I could run. But again, I never overthought it. I didn't think of it too much. I just wanted to get out there and race. And it was one of my first times of really being back in the UK racing. So I wasn't sure how I was going to feel with that, actually racing against people that I raced against as juniors. And as I said at the start, I had no pressure or anything. I just knew that I was going to run well. And I kind of knew I was in good shape, but I don't think I knew I was in that good shape. It's always a nice surprise when you can run that well.
Yeah. And how long had you been sort of focusing on that particular race in your mind? Had you been sort of planned at the beginning of the season to do that? Or was it just you'd heard about it and you thought you'd give it a go?
Yeah, no, we'd kind of, after, cause I did a few cross country races, and then I sat down with my coach and we kind of liked to plan out the summer season. And, we knew the Europeans were obviously last year as well. So that was always going to be, you know, another aim. And, we knew that I had to go back and do that race to run a time and get selected. So it was always on the calendar. But to be honest with you, it was the first time I've done Highgate and I didn't realize how incredible and how amazing it was going to be. I kind of thought, oh, it's just going to be another race that I have to go back and do. And then I come straight back to Spain the next day. And I didn't sleep at all that night. After the race, I was just wild. I was just like, oh my God, what has just happened? You know, I think even if I hadn't have won, it still would have been an all-nighter because it was just so crazy.
Yeah. Have you run in an atmosphere like that? Again, obviously you run the Olympics now, but have you run in an atmosphere as loud and as close to the track?
No, there's nothing like, I couldn't explain to anyone what that's like. And I don't think there's any other race that I know of anyway that is like that. I mean, you get the road races, but you still don't have the atmosphere of people literally being right on the track, you know, meters away from you. It's just crazy.
And like, during the race, obviously you were in the back of the pack there. You managed to stay kind of with people like Pavey and Beth Potter and those kind of guys. You were right at the back of the pack. What were you thinking when you got to like halfway and you're in that position? Did you think at that point, what was going through your mind? Were you thinking, can I win this? Shall I push this on? Or what?
I can't really remember. I think I remember at one point, and I couldn't tell you how many laps it was in, but I was quite far back and I was kind of thinking, I feel really good. So I just decided to move up.
Yeah.
And then I think there was a point where I think it was me, Beth and Kate, I think maybe one other athlete got away a little bit.
Yeah.
And I really was just feeling so good.
Yeah.
But I don't think I ever thought, oh, I'm actually going to win this. Everything just happened. I didn't overthink anything in the race. It just all kind of fell into place. And I think even if I tried to do something wrong on the night, I wasn't going to be able to do anything wrong. Just, it was just so, you know, everything was just working out so well for me. So it was, yeah, so that was really nice.
When did you take the lead? Do you
know? In front of Lynette. Nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it was about 2 laps to go.
Okay.
I think.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, because I've only actually watched the race back recently for the first time, like properly, because I don't like to watch myself run. But then my friends actually videoed the last lap of the race.
Yeah.
So I posted it on social media the other day because I was like, oh wow, actually it was really nice of me to watch it and you then see the atmosphere and everything from the crowd, you know. But I think I went past the net with about 2 laps to go, I think, yeah.
God, that must have been an amazing feeling then to think this is, you know, this Kenyan lady who you've seen on TV running. And how did it feel? Do you remember that experience going past her?
I remember running behind her. I don't know if the agent or somebody, it was like, girls, work together.
Yeah.
And I think within about 300 metres, I'd just been like, screw this, I'm going for it, and just went around her, you know. And yeah, so it was, I can remember, I think I had like goosebumps, and one of my friends was like, come on, Jess, you can do this. And it was funny how you just, most of the crowd is kind of, it seems like a blur, but when you recognise that one tone of voice, you can kind of, you hear that, you know. And
yeah.
I knew who my mum was and my sister was, and this one guy was standing, and it was just perfect because they were like spread around the course, and I heard him with about six, he was at the 200 meter mark, 600 meters to go, and he was like, come on. And yeah, I remember that kind of giving me the boost, and I'm nearly there now. And I think at that point I was like, well, I can actually do this.
And what was great last year is, like, I live in Amsterdam, so I watched the race here. I remember Highgate, but I couldn't make it back last year, and I can't make it this year, annoyingly. But we watched it on the TV, and it was so nice to have, like, my wife was going mad because it was nice to see someone come that you wouldn't expect to win and to run so bravely and win that. But also nice to have the women's race as the main race, because that doesn't happen that often. Usually, you know, it's the men and the big stars and all this kind of. It was so good to see you guys take centre stage.
Yeah.
And it's happened again this year, I think, hasn't it? You guys are...
Yes, it is, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so we're the last ones. It actually is amazing. And I think we're really lucky in Britain because there are so many amazing distance runners now. You know, it's not easy to make the teams. You really do have to... Some of the hardest races are actually qualifying for it, you know? And it's... And that's why it's so amazing that a lot of us, we kind of step up to the game and we say, yeah, we can do this.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not sure how many people are trying to aim for 32 or sub 32 on Saturday, but it's definitely more than two or three of us. So, you know, and I think it's really, really good that we can make it such a fun event and people actually really get into it. You know, they really, really enjoy that. And
yeah.
It's really nice for girls to take that centre stage sometimes, you know, and that being the final event and building up to it is just amazing.
Yeah, because I mean, there wasn't many more exciting, I mean, obviously I love running, so I'm going to say this, but there wasn't many other more exciting races or events than that race last year, I don't think. It was just amazing to watch. And hopefully this year will be the same.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, even comparing it to like the Olympics or the Europeans, any big events like that, Highgate is just really, really different. It's just... Ben obviously has done a fantastic job, but people are they're really, really getting excited about it. And it's just so nice to see that people are getting excited about distance running, because I think sometimes people think, oh, 10 kilometres, is it boring to watch? Like, they're just going around in circles, it's not really a race. But because we're actually making a bigger deal of it in Britain, people are actually getting more involved. And now we see how many people, I don't know how many people are starting actually on Saturday, but we have even the men and the women's race. There's so many starting. It's a proper race.
Yeah.
You know, and there's actually people fighting for these positions. It's not just one or two people running around. There's a group of us that are racing, and then we have a load of people cheering for us. Like, it's just, it's great fun.
And in the women's race, actually, there's, I mean, the men's championship, world championship qualifier, which is held in London, obviously, this year, is ridiculously, it's faster than the Olympic qualifier, I think, the men's. But the women's...
Is it really?
Yeah, it's gone down, which is, I don't get the rationale behind that. But the women's is there's three or four people who have that time, isn't there? So it's going to be really strong.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, yeah. Because the time is 32:15, and I think a fair few of us have already obviously run sub-32 or sub-32:15. So it's going to be... good fun to see whose legs are going to be there on the day.
Yeah. And obviously you as well as the Highgate race, you went to the Olympics in Rio.
Yeah.
What was that like turning up in the village there, was it?
Again, my husband was actually there as well competing, so it made it even more special that we both could be at the Olympics together.
Wow.
I remember walking into the village, and just as it happens, he was stood having some food, and I just walked straight past him, and the whole of the village, you know, we walked past each other, and I hadn't seen him because I was at holding camp and everything. And we arrived, I think we went in there 3 days before our event. So we were in holding camp, then you fly in 3 days before, because the village is quite, as you can imagine, it's the most, you have people like Usain Bolt, you have all the best athletes in the world in this one village, and it can be quite overwhelming.
Yeah.
So they try and keep us out until the last minute, and it was just, I mean, the food hall is just something that I've never seen before. It's just so much food and just massive, and they have buses circulating around the village so you don't have to walk anywhere, and yeah, it was just amazing. And then we had about a 30-minute coach ride to the track, the athletics track. So the day before my event, I decided to go there and just take that wow walking to an Olympic stadium out the day before the race instead of having it the moment that you're about to start the race, you know.
Yeah.
But it does give you goosebumps when you look back and think of it. It's just, yeah, it still feels very surreal, actually. I still look back and think, wow, it actually happened.
And did you see people like you say about hanging around the village and stuff? Was it quite easy to bump into them?
Yeah, you bump into everyone without, I mean, there's so many people, you know, you're probably walking past all these amazing people without even realizing it. But we actually, after my event, a couple of days later, we decided to go to the stadium to watch a couple of the races, and Usain Bolt was sat in front of us on the coach, and we were like, oh wow. Yeah, and just like a normal person, everyone's just so normal and having fun, and just everyone's there to do the same thing, you know. So no one's trying to spite anyone. Everyone's being, yeah, really lovely. And it was quite surreal.
And how did your races go in the end?
Yeah, really good. So mine was a straight final, which is really nice. And I ran a PB there as well. So, yeah, it was just, I mean, my race was quite crazy. We had world records and everything going off. So it was an amazing race. But, the only thing I did do was I thought I had 200 meters to go, but I actually had 600 meters to go.
Oh, no.
My head, kind of the last little sprint, and then the bell goes, and I was like, "How?" But I think you'd get so caught up in the moment.
But
the race went really, really well. So you can't ask for more than running a PV at the Olympic Games. It's almost a dream.
And that was that Ayana, wasn't it? Who looked as if she was just taking a walk in the park. Did she go past you?
Yeah, she did. Yeah. I wasn't expecting to get lapped, I don't think, in the Olympic Games. But I guess I think I said after I had the best seat in the house, which I probably did, you know, to be involved in that was, crazy.
Because you were lapped, but you're lapped by a woman who ran like 15 seconds faster than anyone had ever done in history.
Yeah.
Even including the Chinese girls who are completely whacked up on all sorts of stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure many people were expecting that, but it was the first track final of the Olympics. On the athletics Olympics, obviously, and I think to hit it off with a world record was something else.
Yeah.
I don't think many people were really expecting that on a Friday morning.
and do you, with kind of when you're running internationally, obviously, when you run in England, races at Highgate, you do feel as if it's an honest and fair sport. But when you go to big events like the Olympics, does it ever come into your mind when you're preparing and you're racing that you feel like something's not quite right, or?
I personally never really let it affect me that way. I think the day that I start really worrying over thinking about, is everyone saying on the start line, is anyone cheating? Are they being fair? I think then your race is lost before the gun has even gone off. So I really have to try and believe that everyone, you know, UKA, all the UK anti-doping, whoever of the world anti-doping agencies, everything are doing what they can do to stop the cheats, and that we can all have a fair go at it. So I try and leave that to them, and I try and do my job. And I think that if I do get upset and overthink it, then it will just ruin all my chances. So I really just think I've done all I can do.
Yeah.
I'm clean. I'm okay. So, and that's, and as long as I know that I'm okay, then I think the others can do what they like. They will get, karma will come round. I'm a big believer that karma will come and get anyone that's done anything bad. So that's kind of my way of dealing with it. I think some people do definitely think about it more and that it affects them more, but then I see them not racing as well. And I think, oh, maybe if they can't necessarily change it. So if they, you know, but it's a strange time at the moment. It's definitely a strange time. And almost a bit sad at the moment, actually, that any time any athlete does do really well, it's automatically, they must be cheating. They must be, you know, and I think that can be quite unfair.
Yeah.
Even I had it after Highgate last year, you know, some people saying,
really?
I came out of nowhere, and I was really, and obviously my partner's a cyclist, and they were linking up with this, and I said, this is so unfair. You're not only upsetting, affecting me. You're, you know, you're offending the whole cycling family as well. And, so you have to kind of just put this back in your mind and think people are always going to be negative. People are always going to say things, and I do what, all the best that I can do. And that's, you know, that's what I'm happy with. So.
Yeah. And did, and then, do you think living with your husband and like he changing the subject from drugs a bit, like, do you think him being a professional cyclist and him being in quite a professional setup, so does that like kind of rub off on you, do you think? Do you think it's made you become more professional, but like learning from his practices and how he trains and prepares himself?
Definitely, yeah. I think from the day that I met him, you know, I realized that he's the most calm, relaxed person in the world, and he's really made me, you know, I mean, he's calm, relaxed about everything, but he's made me especially more calm, about my sport and about races, and that actually it's not the end of the world. Racing, you know, we put a lot of time and effort into our races, but that's not what our whole life is about. You know, we have each other, we have a family, we have everything. So, yeah, the fact he's just really calmed me down, and, you know, he's at the top of his game, and he's, you know, he's really just, it's hard to explain, actually. He just put this, it doesn't matter what happens on the day, Jess. You know, like, kind of, it doesn't matter what happens. And I really believe him. And, you know, he has so much pressure going into his races, but he doesn't let that affect him. And, I think we're very lucky that we're very similar. We, you know, we eat well. We like to sleep a lot. We rest a lot. And that's reflected on both of us. So, and also I think being happy makes a big difference. Like, definitely. When we found each other, we became very happy and relaxed, and I think that's how we've then both improved as well, just because we've got each other. And actually, it sounds a bit cliche, but we don't need anything else. Our sport is kind of an extra thing to it. So
yeah, an added bonus.
Exactly, yeah, an added bonus.
And how did his Olympics go? Did he do
yeah
well?
He did good. Yeah, he did really good. Yeah, I think 13th in his race.
Was he in the road race?
Yes, he was. Yeah, he did the road race. He didn't do the time trial. He did the road race. Yeah.
Okay. Is there any situations where you train or do anything together? Like, because it's
not really. Occasionally, he loves coming to the track, and if he can, timing me, and he loves like his little job of doing this or being able to pace me occasionally. But occasionally I'll go out on the bike with him, but that's when he's going on a very, very easy day and I'm going like full gas next to him. So none of our training really links in, but for a bit of fun, you know, in his off season, he'll come for a jog with me, or yeah, I'll go for a ride with him or something. So that's the only way that it really links in, and he likes to pretend he's my second coach with and everything.
Has your, like, after the Olympic experience, has it driven you on to go again? Have you changed anything after that, sort of in terms of your training and preparation, or is it just carrying along the same way as you've been before?
I think it gave me, I haven't necessarily changed a lot, because the year before I've still had, even this year actually, I've had injuries and whatever, so it's just trying to build up on that. But it has definitely given me a confidence, and actually that this is my level now, you know, and that I can do this. And I think before I was always lacking that, lacking the confidence and self-belief, whereas now I'm kind of thinking, well, actually, I have made the Olympics, you know, I'm quite good. Like, yes, I want to improve a lot more, but this is my level. So I think because I've got that confidence now, perhaps I'm going to run faster with having this, you know? So
yeah,
I think it definitely did that. But again, I had a few injuries this winter, so it kind of, which wasn't ideal, but it happens. And I think sometimes while having the injuries, it kind of makes you take the step back of, okay, don't get too excited. You know, I'm still young. I still have a long time to go yet. So just take that step back, heal the injury, and you'll come back stronger. So that's what we've done. But yeah, the Olympics last year was amazing, but I'd love to then also get to Tokyo in a few years' time. That is definitely an aim.
Yeah. And with the injury now, you're back. You're back running. You've raced a couple of times. Is that right? Have you raced once?
I raced twice. I raced once was just, I literally been running for, I think, about properly on the track. I think I'd done one or two track sessions, and I said that I want to get on the track. I want to race. I just wanted to get that feeling. And we knew that I wasn't going to run fast. And, you know, I'd only been running properly for about 10 days, but I said, no, I really want to just, I was just craving a race. You know, I just wanted to race. I was like a little schoolgirl wanting to race. And so we went and did it, and I ran very, very slow. But I was really glad that I did it, because I kind of was like, okay, this is, well, it wasn't my level, but I was like, this is the starting point now. And I felt like in my head I was mentally ready to go again. And then I raced last weekend's 10K on the road in Barcelona, and I ran a PB there, 32:49. So I was really, really happy that I kind of, it made me think, well, actually I'm back on it. So.
And did you win that race?
Yes, I did. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
So I was really happy with that. You know, sometimes you just need that, training's going well, but you actually need that one race to prove that really it is going well. And I had that. So yeah, now it's just resting up for Saturday.
Yeah, fantastic. And when you obviously ran, you ran as a junior and you competed then, did you used to win a lot of races as a junior? Were you quite successful in?
I was at the Aldershot Farnham District group. So obviously, you know, the road relays, cross country relays, we'd win quite a lot there. I won the Southern Cross Country championships. And I was much better over the cross country. And it'd be, as I'd get to the track season, I'd always pick up niggles or sickness or injury, you know, and something would always get in my way. So, growing up, my family were never pushy. They were never really into sport or anything. I did it because I enjoyed it, but I wasn't really 100% focused. And it's only been the last couple of years that I've really realized that actually I can, you know, maybe I can be quite good at this. So yeah. I think when you really set your mind to it and you really focus, then it's amazing what you can do.
Yeah. Actually becoming a winner is quite a difficult thing to do. Like lots of people can, if they run lots of big races, they come 10th, 15th, whatever. Actually being the guy that goes and actually takes the lead and kills off the race is quite a difficult thing to do. Do you think you've now got that killer mindset? Do you think you're able to go and dictate a race and win?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, definitely. I'm a racer. I like to win. You know, yeah. I don't want to come third, fourth, fifth. I want to go out there and win. And I think as well, I've probably got that off Dan. You know, and because he's seen me, he's like, "Jess, you're a racer." And when I first, kind of going back now, when I first rode out here, I kind of fell out of love with running for a while. I wasn't feeling good. I was sick. I was just not enjoying running. So I had about a year and a half of not really training properly, not racing, you know, doing a couple of very small low-key races, but nothing much. Mm. But it was funny how much it just came back that I just wanted to race, you know. And I think that's just built inside me that I'm a racer. I want to win. I want to get out there and, you know, kill everyone and do that. And that's why I think last year that really came out of me, and I think now I've got the confidence as well. Sometimes you can just kind of sit in the group and be happy to sit there, but now I'm like, no, I'm getting out there, I'm doing this, you know. I'm gonna make people hurt. Yeah, so
yeah.
It's just fun to do that, you know. We all work hard, so we may as well make it hard out there.
Yeah, make all that effort count. And then do you have anyone particularly the weekend? Obviously Jennifer Augusta is quite a reputation. Is anyone else you see as being a real like threat or who is going to be the main contenders for the race?
Not really, no. I mean, I'm not overthinking the race, to be honest with you. I'm just going to kind of just get on the start line. I'd like to think that I could be, you know, one of the strongest out there, but you never know who's going to turn up on the day. You know, people weren't expecting me that last year and I went and won, so there could be someone else like that. You never know. You always have to be on it and be aware of what's happening, but I'm excited for it to be a race. I think it's gonna be hard. It's never gonna be easy, but I don't think any of us would do it if it was easy. So,
no.
So yeah, I think there is gonna be probably about five of us that are gonna be quite strong. But yeah, we'll see on the day. We will see.
Yeah, excellent. Well, I've got three final questions to finish off with, and they're just like little quick fire questions. I've been asking everyone that I've done an interview with the same three things, and the first one is, if you could only wear, in the rest of your running career, one make or model of running shoe, what would it be? So not just Nike, it's got to be an actual particular type or...
It would be my New Balance Hanzo, the new race flats that I've just got, because they're amazing.
Okay, good shout. I think you're the first person, maybe it's because they're new, but you're the first person to mention them.
Yeah, so no, I raced, but I mean, probably my coach would kill me because I couldn't do my long runs with them, right, the thing, but they're so good to race in. I love them.
And can you recommend, anything really, but either a book, film, podcast, TV show, magazine, anything. Just recommend something that listeners might find interesting.
I love Supernatural. Supernatural is such a good, it's a TV series in America. It's just amazing. It's so good.
What's it about?
It's about these two brothers. It's a bit weird, actually. I didn't realize I was into this stuff, but they're basically, demons are real, angels are real, like all these vampires, everything are real. And they are going out, living a normal life, but fighting them.
Oh, okay.
Vampires come and like kill the village, and they have to go and save the village and kill the vampires. Or, you know, it's like different.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's different like monsters and such come and, it's just so, yeah. And there's a big storyline behind it as well. So there's a big story, but then there's also small different parts that happen in it. You have to watch it. It's so hard to
Is it Netflix thing?
I don't know if it's on Netflix. We just download it, so I'm not sure if it's on Netflix or not, but definitely watch Supernatural.
And the last thing is, in your opinion, what's been the greatest endurance performance of all time?
Oh, wow. Oh, my goodness. What a question.
Bear in mind, you have to see Paula Radcliffe this Saturday. That's a joke.
As in running? Just
no, it can be anything you like. Someone said, I think Georgie Brunvel said a guy who, I can't remember now, she'll kill me for forgetting, but like a guy who trekked across the Antarctic. So it could be anything.
Oh, wow. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my God. Now I feel on the spot. My mind's gone blank to any distance event ever that's happened. Oh, my God. I'm trying to think of one in cycling, actually, because I think I will get killed if I don't think one in cycling. To be honest, I think what the guys do in the Tour de France is Grand Tours is pretty... I think that's, like, nothing else that most people can do. They don't realise how much they go through and, you know, how tough it is. So I'm going to say the Grand Tours of cycling.
Okay.
I think is, I know it's not just one event. Is that okay to say that?
That's fine.
Because my mind has gone blank, so I'm just going to go with Grand Tours and cycling because it's just insane.
Or it can be an individual. So like, I guess, has anybody won all Grand Tours? I don't know.
Not all Grand Tours, no.
No.
I'm just going to say the Grand Tours and cycling. That's okay.
Yeah.
Excellent. So good luck for Saturday.
Thank you so much. Thank you. That was so kind of you.
Yeah. I hope you have a good race. And I hope you get the qualifying place for London.
Thank you. Yeah, so do I. It'd be amazing if I get that.
And good luck with all your racing for the next couple of years.
Thank you very much. Thank you.